This is Pop Culture Mantra, PCMC, across the way from me, locking eyes with me, with his big brown beautiful eyes.
I'm gazing at you.
Is the one and only, the lonely,
yes.
Emilio Sparks.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. I'm just a man swiping left on Tinder. In front of me, a little off-center, the lovable hazel-eyed bandit, who not only stole my heart, but stole your heart, Michael Buongiorno.
I don't know if you know this, but in direct sunlight, my eyes are shimmering. Emerald. If you want to know why I've got that memorized, it's because it is on my Match.com profile.
Are you on Match.com?
Yeah, and it's so much money for nothing.
I was going to say, like, it costs money to go on that one.
It costs a lot of money.
What do you pay a month?
They do that thing where it's like, it's this much a month, but then they go, okay, pay for the year.
You then you paid for the year.
You have to pay for the year.
Now, have you went on any successful dates?
I haven't gone on any dates.
Because of Match.com.
Yeah. We have a special guest today. He's sitting to... I don't know why I always have to say where people are. He's sitting here at the table.
You like to block everything.
I like people to get an image in their mind.
Yeah, get a nice rack focus going.
Watches wrestling once.
Young Saw's ready.
Watches wrestling once and he's an expert.
Watches
now.
Spider-Man once. Mr. Vin Ignatius Forte.
Yes.
Host of Anytime Podcast and Cartoon Buffoons.
Yes.
Absolutely. Cartoon Saloon. With who? Maddie G?
Yes.
So basically what the premise of that show is they just review old Mutt and Jeff cartoons.
Yep.
That's all it is.
Mutt and Jeff.
What's Blondie and
Dagwood doing?
Me and Emilio, I don't know if you listen to PCMC, but we like to put up a 56-year-old reference way in the beginning just to turn away the boys.
The young kids.
You know what I mean? This is a podcast for
this
the Mac.
This podcast was running like a fine jalopy.
Absolutely. A couple episodes ago, we went on a little bit of a detour to talk about the pilot to Car 54, or are you?
Oh, now you're on the
channel. Yeah, the Fred Gwynne vehicle.
Have you seen it? Have you seen the
I
pilot
have
to
seen
that?
It.
It's terrible.
It is.
It's a terrible show.
It was difficult to watch.
You know,
it wasn't Fred Gwynne at his best.
It was a difficult period for America.
You know why? Because there were four networks. So the Munsters are something that sucks, and I'm sorry if I upset Munsters
really?
Fans.
Wow.
I like the Munsters, but like something bad, let's say, like Car 54, it would get insane ratings compared to now. And they go, wow, everyone's watching this. It's like, yeah, because there's no other choice.
No other thing on. That's why Bonanza was on for so long, for so many years.
Yeah.
My father still watches Bonanza. So, like, I'll...
Where is it on?
It's on the Dumont Network.
Guys, good reference, man. It is on everywhere.
Hashtag Dumont Network.
Dude, it is on...
Really?
It is on TV Land. It's on all these other weird networks. Like, I've noticed these Judeo-Christian, like... television networks like Up and Inspire,
oh,
it's
yeah.
on there
because they're very ethical, those like shows,
yeah, like Ben Cartwright and his sons are very, very ethical, so like it's on that. Literally you can search your viewer guide,
yeah,
and Bonanza might be on as many times as MASH and How I Met Your Mother throughout the day
now,
which is a good six times, so literally you're getting 6 straight hours of
where
Bonanza.
Are these Bonanza actors getting all these royalties?
They're all dead. All in the ground. I tell you what we're here for today.
What are we here for?
We're here to talk about the documentary on Andre the Giant. Is there a subtitle to that? A Giant Among Men. That's not it. I just made that up. Is it just called Andre the Giant?
Yeah.
The little documentary about the big man.
Andre, hashtag, a giant's tale.
Wow.
My giant.
You're really trying.
My giant starring Billy Crystal.
This is a real special episode today. Now, I don't know if it's... wrestling-centric as much as it is pop culture-centric.
Did you like the documentary?
I thought the documentary was good. I think, you know, it really doesn't explore anything I didn't already know because I am a professional wrestling fan, so, like, you already know all these
things. Honestly, as a wrestling fan, it was interesting to see Vince McMahon and Hulk Hogan in the same documentary space.
Why is that?
What I find interesting about the dynamic between Vince and Hulk Hogan in this documentary is Vince talks about more of... the person.
He cries.
And the relationship.
Oh, yeah,
well,
he
says he... No, he doesn't cry. He says he has a mechanism that defeats the idea of crying. He blocks that out. But he got real melancholy. Yeah, there was a little... His eyes were welling with something. But the dynamic of Hogan is always the same thing. It's always the same, and he's been telling the same story for years, with the exception of that he tore his back muscles body slamming Andre the Giant at WrestleMania 3. And the funny part about the whole thing is, no matter what, you could talk about anybody and their mother within professional wrestling, but there will always be a focal point for Hulk Hogan. And it's always odd to me that you have this documentary about Andre the Giant, right? But then for 20 minutes straight,
it's Hogan.
It's just about Hulk Hogan.
Well, he's got to always get his shit in.
Now, I don't know if it's him getting his shit in, but you would not have WrestleMania 3 without Andre the Giant, which in part makes it Hulk Hogan. But
wasn't Hulk Hogan, and I only know from the documentary, wasn't Hulk Hogan like the...
He was up there with the Beatles, Pa.
But wasn't he like the dream of, like, if we're going to be national and have a wide audience, this is the guy. So you've got Andre, who's like in pain and aging and not feeling well, and it's like, okay, you're going to take the mantle from the Giant.
Well, you know, the idea of territories, and they spoke about that on the documentary, the idea of territories Vince McMahon wanted to eradicate.
And he wanted it to be a national, he wanted a national audience.
And by the 90s, he eradicated the territories.
Yep.
Yeah.
Andre the Giant is the perfect example of somebody that was the king of the territories and probably the last known big name in the territories. Where now, if you're not familiar with professional wrestling and you listen to PCMC, the territories would be smaller mom and pop independent professional wrestling promotions.
Yeah.
Guys like Andre the Giant and Ric Flair, you know, would work these territories for X amount of weeks.
And the main thing that really changed from that a lot of people don't really think about now, is that, you know, we're talking about documentaries. A couple months ago, or, you know, last year, there was that Ric Flair documentary, and Ric Flair talks about how he would go territory to territory and lose.
Yeah.
Which is something that you could not do on a national level. So the dynamic changed completely.
Well, the narrative,
it felt like,
right,
you're going to different territories to basically give each territory the same show.
Right. Like, now it's sort of, it's like there's this big narrative where, you know, like when they talk about in a movie, like when Andre started, he started under this, like, this fairy tale name. He was referencing some fairy tale. I forget what it was. And then he was just the Giant. And, like, even in, they were talking about how in WrestleMania 3, they build it as, like, that's the first time Andre and Hulk were gonna fight, but
meanwhile,
they had
Japan.
But everything before WrestleMania 3 was eradicated. It was erased. Honestly, let's
decanonized.
Well, yeah, there was no idea of canon because, let's face it, there was no internet.
Right.
You know, tape trading wasn't this big
thing
yet.
You could go from one city to the next and
nobody would know.
Do the same shtick.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, everything after WrestleMania 3 became widespread attention. So that's why, you know, you could say Andre the Giant never lost. And they never faced each other before. They were good friends. And, you know, Hogan never gave him an opportunity for the title. You know, and it's smart storytelling. Well, you can't get away with that now.
No, you can't.
You know, but to understand who, I guess, the man was, you know.
What's his last name? Rusinov.
And I think to this day, I don't even think the documentary even covered his personal life.
Well, I was going to just say that, you're right, by the way, but what I like about the documentary was it made a choice to go, listen, this guy is like the last myth. This guy was a giant who lived, and we have all these myths about who he was and how he acted and who he really was and, you know, how he drank and, you know, he got passed out here, he picked up some guy's car. There's all these legends, and I like that the movie approached his life like a myth. It was like, we're telling you a myth rather than we're telling you the real story of a man's life. I couldn't even tell whether or not that blonde lady who lives with him was his girlfriend or not.
You won't know.
They kind of say that she is, but then they kind of say she isn't.
Yeah.
She's like, I was there helping him. And it's like, what does that mean, though?
You had a shot of his daughter who spoke. It wasn't detailed about,
like, where she came from, who her mother was.
Yeah, it wasn't detailed about how the mother met.
She grew in a cabbage patch.
Were they a one-night stand? Like, what was it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, then you had Ric Flair come on and, you know, jokingly make a job. Yeah, yeah.
Like, there was a whole chunk about everyone being like, he had a big dick, he's a giant. Has there ever been a documentary, like an unofficial one, that's been like, here's the craziest shit? Like, is that documentary exist?
No, well,
I mean, beyond the mat.
Beyond the Mat.
But does Beyond the Mat get into, like...
Jake Roberts smoking crack on film? Yes.
Aren't his parents, like, brother and sister? Or cousins or something, Jake Roberts?
It's weird.
They're relatives.
It's weird. It's all weird.
That documentary was, like, the saddest thing in the world.
Yeah.
So, but there isn't a documentary that's, like...
The unofficial Andre.
Well, the resurrection of Jake the Snake Roberts, produced by DDP, is a good one. That's on Netflix.
Yeah, I like that one.
That's a good one. But I think in terms of...
when he palms the pill.
Yeah, he did.
What an expert drug addict.
But in terms of this Andre thing, I didn't get anything that I was like, wow.
You didn't already know?
Yeah.
As a fan? Did you like it, though?
I mean, I even went back and read the Sports Illustrated article that, you know, that was in the... from December 81.
Oh, wow. And so that's from that time.
I'm looking at it, and I'm like, this is like... Again, this is all, like, stuff that's safe, and I guess they were keeping it kayfabe back then. I don't know. You know, there's no real idea of who he was personally. Like, you know, what was the dynamic between him and his family? Why did he leave so early? Yeah, like they said that he had ideas that he wanted to be somebody and didn't want to live on the farm. But then in his later years, he regressed to farm life because that's where he said no one would look at him.
Well, it was in, like, North Carolina, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
We would need, like, the diaries of Andre the Giant to come out.
But see, again,
Judd Apatow to get the diaries of...
Yeah.
The diaries of Andre the Giant.
But see, Mike made a really good point at the start of this conversation that it's all tall tale. It's all mythology, right. You know? And even now...
It's a pretty short movie, too. It's like 90 minutes.
Is he the last one that we can consider a tall tale that will have this mythology forever? Like... Will we ever get somebody of not even of that stature again, but somebody of that importance where you're going to talk about him, like, yo, did you hear that this guy? And they talked about it where Ric Flair for years thought he had two rows of teeth in his mouth.
Wow, Ric Flair's a dumb guy. unless that's a bit. See, some of the interviews on it, I was like, this is part of the mythology. Like these guys are embellishing shit.
See, but I think that's what the documentary highlights more than anything else. It doesn't play up on the personal life of Andre the Giant. It doesn't even eat very small teeth.
Like, they're weird because his head was so big.
Yeah. He had a big head.
He looked like one of those Titans from Attack on Titan with the weird teeth. Anyone?
I know what you're talking about.
Vin gets it. That's the thing about Vin is Vin gets it.
I don't know, man. It rubbed me the wrong way in certain areas because it's like, here you are, you're plugging this thing, and the trailer has it as, he was in pain. He drank because of the pain.
Yeah, they definitely sold it as, like, you're going to get the light Andre stuff, but then, like, get ready, because we're going to take you down to...
Right. Which I've seen before. I feel like it wasn't that different from, like, an E! True Hollywood Story from 2001.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Here he was a wrestler... Then he was in pain.
You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of the old biography channel.
Biographies that
Steve Allen would narrate.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was the same. It was almost the same thing.
It was like so little information.
He drank all this beer. Yes, we know that. He drank all this wine.
He could fart for 30 minutes. It's like, okay, great.
That I actually almost vomited when I was watching that scene.
I will say this. The Rob Reiner, Billy Crystal, Carrie Elwes, Robin Wright stuff, I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
Because they
weren't in a wrestling context. So yes. It was a whole different thing.
Right. I like that he called Rob Reiner boss.
Well, he called everybody boss.
Boss. He seemed like a genuinely nice fellow before he was in pain.
Well, I think even in pain, he was genuinely nice. But you
hear stories about him like kind of being rude to people, but because he was sort of suffering and stuff. If you're in true pain,
yeah.
It's gonna damper your demeanor.
Well, you know, he said it in, I guess, during one of those behind-the-scenes Princess Bride things that you would see on, like, a DVD special. He was like, you know, they have all this stuff for people living with disabilities. He goes, but they don't have anything for people with my disability.
Remember they show in the documentary the chair his mother made for him?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that huge chair.
So he can sit comfortably.
Right.
But then
he wasn't... Imagine that. Imagine you're never comfortable anywhere, in any restaurant, God forbid you're on a plane.
He was always on planes.
In clothes, in shoes,
imagine him walking in here right now. You wouldn't be able to get in. And if he got in, like, where is he going to... He's the only one sitting on the couch. Maybe he breaks the couch.
Right. It's crazy. That's a shitty life to have. They talk about him crying. They talk about how, like, his best friend was like, yeah, like, he really was, like... Everyone looked at him because he was a giant, but, like, also, like, he was kind of shy and he you could hurt his feelings.
Yeah, but then also, in the same token, he was an embodiment of fear. I mean, when I was a little kid, I was scared of him. You just look at him, he's scary, yeah. Then you as you get older, you grow to appreciate who he was and, you know, the character and what his contribution was to professional wrestling. But as a little kid, that's a scary-looking dude,
man. What was his persona? Was he a good guy or a bad guy?
He was...
Whatever he needed to be in a territory.
Specifically in the WWF, he was friends of Hulk Hogan, but then got jealous of Hulk Hogan.
Uh-huh.
And basically, there's like this famous clip of Hulk Hogan celebrating backstage.
Oh, wait, that's in the documentary.
Yeah. Documentary with the champagne.
The first part that Vin's talking about is when Hogan beats the Iron Sheik for the championship.
Yeah.
Okay. And they're celebrating, they're pouring champagne, and, you know, oh, my friend, congratulations, and blah, blah, blah. If you fast forward almost three years later, and you see Andre the Giant with Bobby the Brain Heenan, who at that point is supposed to be the embodiment of scumbaggery, Bobby Heenan, because, you know, he was the evil foil that was trying to take down Hulkamania and just couldn't do it. So what happened?
Couldn't do it. It was sweeping through the nation.
I mean, he was filling Andre's head, quote-unquote Hogan's friend, with all this palaver about Hulk Hogan.
So he became a bad guy as a way to sort of...
solidify Hulk Hogan as the good as guy, the good yes. Guy. And then the point of Hogan even says it in the story, which actually I do like that, where he said, I had Vic's vapor rub on my finger... And I was trying to, like, you know, get it to well up in my eyes so I could tear. Yeah,
right.
He goes, but the greatest thing that happened was when he grabbed my shirt, he ripped off my cross and it cut me and I started to bleed. And that's an odd thing where Hogan made a big thing, especially a big splash in the 80s. The reason why he's fighting Andre the Giant is not only because his friend turned his back on him, but he ripped the cross off his neck.
God damn.
That was Hulkamania. Eat your vitamins, you gotta say your prayers.
Drink your milk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, without that, you wouldn't have, I guess, the meteoric rise of wrestling at that point, because there was a boom after that. And Andre the Giant is part of the reason. We know Hulk Hogan is the son and everything else revolves around him for that specific maybe first eight WrestleManias.
Yeah.
But it's Andre. And I like the other thing was if Andre didn't like you, Andre wasn't going to work for you. And if you really pissed him off, he was going to be stiff in the ring. And I like that they kept on saying that he was fucking with Hogan. Hogan didn't know whether or not he was going to do the right thing, brother.
Right.
Or was he going
Don't
to
worry.
Go rogue and do whatever he wanted to do.
Don't worry.
So, you know, and you saw that with him, you know.
No baby oil.
That was the Savage.
Not just baby oil.
I don't think that he was ready to die at that point. Like
the way they portrayed it.
Well, he was 46 when he passed, but I don't think he was ready to die the way they said he was. Like, he was ready to go off, and
but he,
you know,
never went to the doctor and stuff.
Well, the only reason why he went to a doctor was because he had to get his ankle surgically repaired.
What I'm saying is, like, he seemed to.
I think he knew. Yeah.
Right. You're saying you don't think that he wanted to die, but. I don't know. He didn't seem to put effort into wanting to continue his life.
No, but I'm saying I don't think he wanted to die at that specific moment. I think he knew, like...
He died when he was home visiting his father's dying, right? Or his father's funeral.
Yeah, but that was like... He main evented at 3. He was in the title tournament at 4. In 5, he was there. He fought against Demolition at 6, where they reclaimed the tag team championships. And then by 7, he comes in and does a surprise entrance when he's on crutches, and he's gone. Then I think he wrestles one more match for All Japan with Giant Baba, and then he goes to France, and he passes away. Uh-huh. So that there's still a lot. There's a lot of years, like...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, where he didn't just go off into a corner and die. So I think it really plays up on the dramatics on that aspect of it, where everybody said, oh, he was ready to go, he was ready to go. And he wasn't ready to go, because if he was ready to go, he would have ended himself.
Yeah, but he also, when they said, hey, go to the doctor, do something about this stuff, he was like, no, I'm all right.
Yeah, well, he didn't want to, I guess he knew. He was like, what are you going to do? You going to fix this? From the looks of it, it sounds like he made peace with whatever this
Why
was.
Why do you think he was such a, I mean, I'm not telling tales out of school here, but we'd have to call him an alcoholic. Why do you think he was such an alcoholic then?
Well, first
of all, start in the morning with the cases of wine.
I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, what are you going to do on the road?
Well,
what was there to do?
I was literally hearing a wrestler talk the other day about thank God for cell phones now, because if you're bored on the road, you could pull up YouTube, you could do a million different things. Back in the day, you know, you didn't have any of that.
Yeah,
so if you're going to. So a lot of these people were flying out to Japan if they weren't working for a territory in America.
Yeah.
So you have to figure, you're flying out to Japan. Okay, I'll watch some TV. What are you going to watch? It's all in Japanese. I'll read a book. What book are you going to read?
So I'll just get tanked?
If you're around other wrestlers and they're all doing drugs,
that
you're going to do
like
drugs with them.
See, that feels more like an excuse than an actual reason. I feel like...
Well, because it also... Because
there's a lifestyle there of, like, you know, we're partying and then we're,
right.
You know, we've all been there. Am I right?
No.
No?
No. Even Ric Flair is the last of that wild mythology within pro wrestling. You don't have that anymore. You know, and I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing or a bad thing, but I think, you know, if we have kids one day and they're going to hear about, so, wow, you know, and they Google Andre the Giant, these things are going to continue to grow. I don't think you're going to have that with a John Cena or an Undertaker.
There are other people that have the condition he had, but has there been anyone as big as him documented?
No. I mean, WWE tries, specifically for that context, like, every once in a while they'll try and seek out, like, another giant.
Yeah.
Like, in the 90s, WCW had a character called the Giant. Where it was supposed to be, because obviously they were WCW, they don't have the rights to Andre the Giant, that was a WWF thing. They just called him the Giant and made, like, allusions to, oh, he's Andre the Giant's son.
Yeah. It's funny how they introduced him, Paul Wright, the Big Show, who played the Giant. He came out wearing the Fezzik shirt.
Oh, yeah.
And he threw it at Hulk Hogan, and Hogan goes, brother, this is Andre's. Like, they were alluding that that was the son of Andre the Giant.
Huh. But then in the mid-2000s, they had the Great Khali.
Yes, they did.
Who, like, he was certainly not as big as Andre, but...
Well, they also had Giant Gonzalez as well.
They had Giant Gonzalez with his slim good body suit that he would wear.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's not a ton of people... I mean, again, there's, you mentioned before, Giant Baba, but that's a whole other thing.
There were big men, there were giant men with the same thing, but, you know, why the Big Show has added years onto his career, besides diet and exercise changing and the way professional wrestlers take care of themselves on the road.
Yeah, it's funny, when you look at the old wrestlers that they show in the movie, they're just like, they look like your dad's friends. They're like, they're big, they got big arms, but they got bellies. Now you look at them and they look like action figures.
Well, it changed. It changed. You know, the idea of diet and exercise and functionality and training and the way they do that.
Who knew?
Yeah, who would have thunk it?
Who would have thunk it?
Why Big Show or the Giant has lasted this long was they took out the tumor on his pituitary gland.
Which Andre didn't want.
No. No, but I think even at that point, they did that on the Big Show when he was relatively young. Andre, they found this out when he was in his late 30s, so I don't know what...
They couldn't have done anything.
...could have done to stop that.
The documentary says that they couldn't have reversed anything, but they could have stopped it from continuing. Because he kind of was always growing. Like, I think that's what gets you.
Well, he was always growing, but at a certain point, that... tragically dovetailed with the fact that he was getting weaker.
Yeah.
Well, was it always growing? Because, like, the growth plates in your body, they do stop. Is it to the point where your organs continue to grow?
I think so.
Yeah, I think that's more what it was.
He could have intervened with surgery and maybe extended his life. And for some reason, he didn't do that.
You know, another thing was they never explained the dynamic between his family. His brother, his two brothers were like, yeah, I loved him. He was my older brother. Okay, but... how was he as a kid?
Right.
How was he as a grown-up? How did he deal with the success of the spotlight at such a young age? Mm-hmm. You know, what was his thoughts in his final time? What was the relationship? And his daughter doesn't even get into it. Well, what was the relationship between him and his daughter later in life before he passed?
She acts like she never knew him.
Yeah.
I'll say I would not be shocked if a big part of that non-candidness has to do with the fact that there was such a heavy involvement from the WWE.
With the documentary?
Yeah.
Well, during Snickers Presents WrestleMania 34, they played an ad for it.
And they have the Andre the Giant Battle.
The Memorial Battle Royal. But did they produce or did they executive produce
the film? I think if Vince is involved in any way, he's involved in a big way. You know what I mean? I think if you get to talk to him, he gets to put his fingerprints on things.
Yeah, but Vince was very good in that. I mean, Vince didn't hold no punches. I mean,
yeah, it was no Bob Costas.
No.
Don't you feel bad? He smacks the papers.
You know, I think the way, you know, Vince came into it, he was open, he was honest, and I think he could have talked about it more. Yeah, he was very human in that. You know, there's an elegance in the way Vince McMahon speaks. And
well, let's not get crazy.
There is. And you can tell, and you can tell that there was a relationship. Now, I don't know if that was sullied. I want to know the dynamic between that relationship as well.
I want to know all this stuff. What I need is not a documentary. I need an HBO series or I need a movie about Andre.
But who plays Andre?
CGI. No, I don't know. I don't know. Who's out there that can play Andre?
Nobody. Nobody can play Andre.
We can do... we'll have to find somebody. We could do Jonah Hill, but like do a forced perspective thing, like Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
So he looks big.
Okay.
Do you know, I was just listening to a podcast with Joe Manganiello on it, and he's been shopping around. He wants to do a movie where he plays Macho Man Randy Savage, and apparently, like, no one wants to do it with him. Like, he's had meetings, and they're like, no, we don't think anyone cares.
I love Macho Man. I can't really see that compelling a movie.
Yeah, I don't know what the public interest
would be. I think it's going to be a lot about everything that was going on at that time just through him. So it's going to be a lot of those stories.
See, but there's another... Again, they come from... I think the 80s had the last class of professional wrestlers where you can tell tall tale and wise tales.
Right, because they were just drinking and fucking coking and going crazy all day long.
You know, like there was stories where Savage would lock Miss Elizabeth in broom closets and tell the British Bulldogs, if she gets out, throw her back in, you know, and things of that nature.
Sounds great. Sounds, you know, like a charm.
I don't know. It's weird, you know, like, you know, and then in
you
the
know
90s.
You know, he had dandruff.
Who?
Macho Man Randy Savage.
Did he?
Yeah, when they found his car, he had Head and Shoulders in the back seat. This is PCMC.
Why does everyone I know have a bad dead Macho Man joke? I have a friend who has another Macho Man joke.
Mike will be at the Lab Hut in Cincinnati, Ohio, the 4th, 8th, and 10th.
Why am I taking so many days off in between sets?
Because you just want to write new material.
Everyone I know has a bad Macho Man joke. I have a friend who every single time he meets someone who's into wrestling, he goes, oh, you like Macho Man? He's like, yeah, I like Macho Man. He's like, well, you know, when Macho Man died, he had a very specific way, you know, he wanted his body to be treated. You want to know what it was? Like, what was it? Like, he said, oh, yeah, dig it. And I'm like, that's the stupidest show I've ever heard.
But, you know, the most offensive thing was...
Stab into a palm tree. Well,
there was
There
was no, you keep on talking the way you're talking, son, I'm going to strangle you with this fucking cable.
I must be thinking about Jane Mansfield.
You know what? I guess Bonesaw wasn't ready.
Oh God, there's so much fun to be had. This is Pop Culture Man Show, and you can follow Emilio at Emilio Sparks on Twitter. You can follow the show Pop Culture Man Show on Instagram.
Ooh,
of course,
yeah.
Of course, that's right, Ben. Of course, follow us on Stitcher and iTunes.
I'm ready to go. Bye bye.
You know what this, you know, podcast is?
What?
It's the cream of the crop.
Ooh, brother, time is. What is he? What's that?
Oh, yes. It's
time. Space is the place.
Time distortion. Space is the place, me, Gene.
Ooh, yeah.
I'm going bye bye.
Go bye bye.
You're going left, Elizabeth. I'm going right.
Bye bye.